And now on WRS, Michael McKay with the McKay Interview.
Hello, everyone. It's always a pleasure to bring new ventures to the attention of the wider McKay Interview audience, and an even greater pleasure to have as my guest the familiar voice of someone who's been on the show before. The new venture, at least relatively new, is the bringing together of science and diplomacy in a powerful and influential combined partnership here in Geneva to serve, to take advantage of the rich talent base of International Geneva and of Switzerland, and to project it more pointedly into the wider world for the benefit of humankind. My guest today is Michael Muller, known to many of you listening as the Director General of the United Nations Office at Geneva up until a year or so ago. Well, you cannot keep a good and energetic man down, and he's re-emerged as one of the principal leaders of this new organization that I mentioned, which is called the Geneva Science and Diplomacy Anticipator Foundation. Quite a mouthful to say, and so for short they call themselves GESDA. We're going to hear from Michael Muller himself why this organization has been formed and what it is doing that will make a difference. Hello, Michael. Welcome back to the McKay Interview. It's always good to see you, and thanks for making time for me and our listeners.
Thank you for inviting me again, Michael. It's good to see you.
In fact, due to the continuing public health regulations, our meetings and movements are limited, so we're conducting this interview via Zoom. It's become, regrettably, but necessarily, the new reality. Let's hope that 2021 ends better than it started. Michael, you and I had a brief chat about your new activity before Christmas, and since then I've been reading about it. I must confess that my curiosity has been even more stimulated. I'm not only interested to learn more from you, but also keen for you to share your knowledge and insights with our listeners. Now, here's my first question. Science and diplomacy. There's obviously a gap in the market, or else the governments of Geneva and the Swiss Confederation would not be putting public money into GESDA. Yet my first question is an obvious one. There are already about 700 to 800 NGOs in Geneva. Why another one? Why this particular marriage? I mean, science and diplomacy.
Yeah. Well, that's a central question, isn't it? Certainly one of them. Let me just first say that I'm not sure that we can be characterized as an NGO. We're a foundation that was created by the government of Switzerland together with the government of Geneva and the city of Geneva. But actually, it doesn't really matter because we are now in a situation where these kinds of distinctions make less and less sense. We all have to work together and pool our resources to get to the solutions that we need to counter the big threats that the world is facing right now. So the why is quite clear. You know, humanity is facing global challenges, to put it mildly, as very existential challenges, and putting the people and the planet under enormous stress. And at the same time, we're experiencing breakthrough science and technological discovery at a breakneck speed right now that will require increased speed of adaptation by all of us. And that requires that we get a grip on these technologies to make sure that we are in charge of how we shape our future and not the other way around. And in order to do that, it's quite clear, it was quite clear to us and those who participated in creating this on a sort of a larger scale, if you want, that we can no longer afford to not include science into our conversations, into our policy setting, into the decisions that we take both globally, regionally, nationally, locally, on how to move forward in dealing with these big challenges that we're faced with every day. And GESDA is a child of that insight, if you want, where our job is to go out and scan and anticipate what science is going to bring us in terms of new technologies over the next 5, 10, 25 years. Bring those scientists who are working on these things together with the potential end users, which are what we call in a broad sense diplomat or diplomacy, but these are the people who work in the field to improve the lives of people who need it the most. So putting these groups together, these are communities that don't normally speak much to each other. They have a different kind of language. They don't know much about each other's insights and entry points. And it was imperative to find ways, innovative ways of putting these together to have conversations, to sit and agree collectively on which of these sciences and technologies would be the most adaptable to translate into tools that would help those who are out there helping people and those most in need to have a better life.
So we're going to talk a little bit more about what you actually do later in our conversation. But for the next question really is, what are the goals you've set yourself? What has your organization set its sights on to achieve? Just as new, didn't exist before. So I imagine someone or a number of like-minded people, as you said, saw a need that by satisfying it would benefit Geneva and Switzerland and the wider world. Please give me a little bit more information about the vision that created the idea and that you've now turned into a reality. And then we'll talk about the reality afterwards.
Right. So the sort of three actions, if you want, that are at the core of what we do is, as I said before, the anticipation. We're scanning and putting together, we're scanning what's happening in the laboratories around the world to see what's cooking in those labs. We're bringing together the various sets of actors to identify and map these trends still under development. So that's the anticipatory aspect, which is really central to what we're doing. The word anticipation in our title is the heart of our identity.
So would you say then that you're a research body at that stage? You're really basically an investigator looking at all the different options of what's going on?
Yes, that's part of it. I mean, a big part of our in sort of the people who are helping us are scientists who have been working, and we'll get back to that in a moment. Yeah. But right now we have about 65 or more scientists from around the world who are looking and have been asked to look at what is likely to happen in the different fields that we have identified that we want to also get to that. And then come up with some scientific papers that we can start working on. The second is to accelerate the bringing to market or the bringing to people of these things. And that is done by putting together those potential end users and those who have a clear knowledge and insight in what the challenges are, what are going to be the needs of our world, and how we align the needs of the future with the science of the future in a way that makes sense, that is the most impactful. And the third aspect of that is the translation. How do we translate all this into action? How do we actually bring all of these conversations to operationalized solutions that can be used in the field? And we can talk about these solutions in a moment as well. They can be made in very different ways, from being tools, from new organizations, from new policies, et cetera. Now, it's very important to what I'm mentioning now, which is that all of these activities are based on three fundamental overarching questions. And that is, they're quite simple questions in there as I say them, but in fact, they're very fundamental. So the first one is, who are we? What does it mean to be human in the era of robots, of gene editing, of augmented reality? I think that's a very central question because it speaks to the kinds of science that we're looking at. It speaks to the ethics of the solutions, the ethical aspects of the solution, and the human rights aspects of the solutions. And is an important central element of how we filter, if you want, the kinds of decisions that we're going to be taking.
So when you say we, you mean mankind? We're talking about mankind?
No, we're talking about JESDA and how we are going to, these are the filters, the three I'm giving through which we are looking at our activities. And
right.
Looking at our activities. So who are we? The second is, how are we going to live together? Which deployment of technology can help reduce inequality and foster inclusive development and well-being? And the third one is, how can we ensure humankind's well-being with the sustainable health of our planet? How can we supply the world population with the necessary food and energy and regenerate our planet? And here clearly we means all of us. But I mean, our ambition is to come up with solutions that will actually help us all to get to these positions. Now, in order to do that, we have chosen as a starting point four issues that we are now working on and within which we're working, four platforms, if you want. The first one is quantum revolution and advanced artificial intelligence. The second one is human augmentation. The third one is eco-regeneration and geoengineering. And the fourth one is science and diplomacy. And we have now have been working on these, and our scientists have been working on this. We recently, just before Christmas, also had our first meeting between the scientists and the potential end users, you know, the people in the diplomacy forum, at a fairly high level, at quite a high level, actually, with a terrific conversation between these two communities that, as I said before, never really meet, but where there was an incredible energy on both sides to actually do that and come up with some solutions and come some suggestions, which are now going to be going to the board of JESDA at the end of this month, and they will then decide on which of the many topics. We can't do everything. We're a small organization, quite small actually for the time being, but we catalyze action amongst our scientists. And so the board will decide on two or three different topics on which we're going to be working on.
Before we go too far, Michael, for the benefit of those listening and for myself who are not scientists or not mathematicians, just say those four priorities again, please, just so that we hear them at least twice from you before we go into the details. Sorry, yeah. But I'm not in the an expert in that field.
Quantum revolution and
advanced. Quantum revolution.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's a lot of work being done on quantum issues of all sorts, and advanced artificial intelligence. These are technologies and science that are being worked on at breakneck speed right now. That will make a fundamental and very deep change in our lives, all of us. If we think that the way that science has leapfrogged into our lives through this pandemic over the past year, which indeed it has. And the way we work, the way we use technology in our lives to a much greater extent than before, this is zero compared to what we're going to be seeing over the next years in terms of the very fundamental change in how we live, how we work, how we deal with problems, also the big existential ones. So this is a really very central issue that we need to deal with. The second one is human augmentation.
Human augmentation.
Yeah.
This is linked to artificial intelligence.
Such things as gene editing, assisted memory or improved memory, putting machine and human together, it's chimeras, some of it is fairly hair-raising stuff, actually, for people like you and me who are not scientists, but the fact is that it's happening, and we need to get a grip, and we need to understand what's happening, and we need to have better governance, and we need to make sure that the ethical aspects are taken care of, that the human rights aspects are taken care of, and more importantly, or just as importantly, we need to have equity. We need to make sure that everybody benefits from this. The cardinal principle of the Sustainable Development Goals is leave no one behind, and we have adopted that as our cardinal principle. So this is not just for people in the north, it's for people all over the planet, and particularly those who need it the most.
I don't mean this as a diversion, but if those are your sort of four main priorities, just give me and the listeners some sense of what you discarded, because there must have been a lot of competition to be in that list of priorities for you. What other things are on the table?
Let me just give you the next two. The other one is eco-regeneration and geoengineering, which kind of speaks for itself, which is how do we deal with the climate and the environmental changes that we're facing. And the fourth one is science and diplomacy. How do we use technology to make peace? How do we use technology to mediate between warring factions? How do we use technology in democracy and in how we govern ourselves and how we help everybody to get to a better government model? These were just not plucked out of thin air. These were the project, the result of some very deep conversations amongst the end users. And these are not the only ones. These are the beginning. These are the first four issues that we're going to be dealing with, because they were considered to be some of the most burning problems or even burning solutions, if you want, for some of the problems that we are faced with. So it's not that things were discarded. It's just that we are starting with this. Our board decided on these four at our advice, and at the advice predominantly from our scientists, some of which are really world class and top folks around the world. So this is what we're going to be working on over the next couple of years, and then we will see. Now, what is happening, of course, is We looked at about 12 different issues within these four platforms, and I can mention some of them if you want.
Please, yes, please.
I'll mention a few within each of these four platforms where we asked our scientists to look at it. How do we look at what's happening in the transition from sort of a context-driven and higher-order reasoning AI to general artificial intelligence, which is a much broader adaptation? And then how are we looking at a large-scale quantum network for secure quantum computations, which is a very deep fundamental change of how we use computers, if you wanted to put it in simple words, and what they can do for us in terms of managing our lives and managing all our activities. In human augmentation, one of the issues is cognitive engineering and memory enhancement. And how, what does that mean, and how is that going to be managed and governed is a second question. One of the interesting things that came out of our conversation between these two communities on the 18th of December as a general themes, but very strong came through in every conversation that we had, was the issue of ethics, the issue of governance, and the issue of equity, making sure that no one is left behind. And so this will imbue everything that we do and will kind of be a part of the red thread. Another one in the human augmentation is genomic medicine, chimeras, and human genetic resource management. We have seen already over the past couple of years the specter of what it means to start fiddling with the genomes. And, you know, remember we had this, for example, this Chinese doctor who changed the genomic makeup of a couple of twins. And this needs to be governed. We need to be very clear in our minds that we don't sort of invent Frankensteins, that we don't invent stuff that's going to be running away from us. Because some of these issues, for example, are inherited. So you change somebody's DNA and their kids may inherit it, and there may be mutations. All of this stuff has to be governed. In the regeneration and geoengineering, we're looking at the decarbonization of industry and negative emissions technologies. We need to do something about our CO2 footprint of everybody. We're looking at eco-regeneration, both in space and in oceans. Resources, synthetic life. And on platform four, on science and diplomacy, we're looking at how globalization is evolving, what future of work is going to look like, how we're going to ensure through technology inclusive development. We are looking at the future of governance and multilateralism. We're looking at what we call social augmentation. if you know, the convergence of digital and neurosciences will have a very strong impact on future societies and the position of human beings. And we have to decide on what kind of choices we make and how these technologies can augment social interaction and help us work towards citizen empowerment. Okay. So there's all sorts of social, technical, cultural, innovations that can come out of these technologies that we need to look at. And then we look at values, behavior, and futures literacy, how we can help people actually have access to these technologies. They need to be taught. I mean, this is not something that you get born with. And right now there's a big imbalance between those who have access and understand the technologies and those who don't. And we need to help with that as well. So these are some of the issues that we are going to be looking at, that our scientists have worked on and that have now presented a number of papers on it. These were part of the discussions on the 18th, and we're now going to present all of this to the board that will decide on how we move forward.
Okay, thank you, Michael. We're going to go into that in a bit more detail in the second half of our show. But my guest today is Michael Muller, chairman of the Diplomacy Forum of the Geneva Science and Diplomacy Anticipator Foundation, GESDA. And until recently, as many of you listening will know, he led the United Nations Office at Geneva. Tell me, Michael, what I'm still not clear about is how, and you're probably the ideal person to ask this question, how you take a lot of these ideas and notions, having done research at the highest level, and then translate that into action to get governments to do things, because only by getting governments to do things can you actually bring about anything useful. I mean, you've been in the hot seat there for 4 or 5 years in the multilateral forum. You know, explain to us in simple language how you get from the idea to the next thing, which is the doing of.
Yeah, and that's obviously central to what we're trying to do. There's no point in having an outfit that just sits and talk. We've got plenty of talk shops around the world. We don't need So we've come up with a different kind of process that we call the Situation Room, which is a kind of a funnel through which we accompany all the different actors, not just the science and the diplomacy actors, but also social scientists, the youth actors, civil society, citizens, artists, everybody, the broadest possible conversations that we can create without, you know, stopping ourselves, in order to ensure that the solutions that come out at the end of that funnel have the greatest amount of acceptance, and that we have created the trust that is needed in those technologies or in those solutions for them to be impactful. So there's a whole process that we accompany, that through with the scientists, with our colleagues in the future users, potential users, end users of this, who sit down and talk. So we help. Sometimes I talk of ourselves as a kind of a dating agency, where we put people together and who didn't know each other before, but also a translation agency, where we help translate the different languages and the different perceptions into an agreed and collective decision on how we move forward. We are also doing, and we'll come back to the structure in a moment of how this works, but once we get to the point where there are solutions, we are also going to be investing in them, so that we help these scientists bring the stuff that they've come up with and that we have all agreed is the most appropriate to turn into tools to market as quickly as possible. And governments are part of that conversation. They will be in that room as well. It's clearly, governments are incredibly interested in what we're doing, because at the end of the day, it's their citizens who are going to be the beneficiaries of what we're doing. So I've been briefing governments over the past several months, they are very, they're so interested, in fact, that many of them ask us, can we have a JESDA back home? And so we are now thinking of how we can create kind of a JESDA in a box, if you want, that we can franchise out to governments, so they can do the same there and put their scientists and their policymakers in a more local context.
So for you, as the, being the person in charge of the diplomacy forum, you're more than just a master convener. You're also basically running both ways, with trying to get people to understand the complexity, but with your knowledge of how things are translated into policy and action, showing people the way forward so that they don't get held up unnecessarily by hurdles which you can anticipate.
Yes, that's part of it. The outreach part of our work is under my forum, the Diplomacy Forum. I initiate the conversations. I bring people together. I mean, me and my colleagues, and we all together in this at the same time. Very much a team that is composed of both sides of the aisle, if you want, the scientific and academic side and the diplomacy side. But the forum is the one that the Diplomacy Forum is the one that that does the outreach and brings people together.
I see. Now, you've got a cast of highly impressive stars from all disciplines and experiences. Peter Brabeck, just to name a few, Patrick Ebersher, Samantha Bessel, Micheline Calmy-Ray, Matthias Egger, Jeremy Farrar, Fabiola Gianotti, Mambogete Farkeng, and many others. For those of us not close to such distinguished thinkers and doers, how do you utilize such blue chip talent and human resources to make a measurable difference? In other words, what do they do, and what do you expect of them?
Well, you've just enumerated the members of our board. And of course, first of all, they are our board members, and therefore they are the ultimate decision makers of how we're going to move forward, etc. And as you, people may have noticed this, it's a very diverse board from different paths in life, from different regions. Gender is also taken care of. We're very clear that we need to be as inclusive as possible in not just in our board, but also in all the other people that we have asked to come and help us. And there are quite a few. I'll come to that in a second, because we have a whole group of people, both on the science side and on the diploma side, that are equally extraordinary individuals in their own right, and who have all agreed to come together. And let me just stop here, because this is one of the elements that I'm particularly pleased about. As we set out to create this over the past year, and we approached people, we started with scientists and then the diplomacy actors, very few said no. I mean, they immediately caught the importance and the benefits of what we're doing and said yes. And they're all incredibly busy people.
I can imagine.
Who have pretty heavy day jobs. And they practically, all of them said yes. And they have participated with extraordinary enthusiasm and have all seen the necessity for the two groups to sit down and talk together to include science into the policy making and into the diplomacy making. And this is, of course, also very central to the policy of Switzerland. And so, you know, there's a lot of synergies that are happening here. The current government has focused very clearly on science and diplomacy as one of their policies. And frankly, the fact that JESDA has been located in Geneva is not an accident. This is the operational hub of the international system, this town, this international Geneva. And the amount of actors who are here who will be part of the discussions and the search for solutions, the ecosystem is absolutely tailor-made for an initiative like JESDA. So this is why we're here and working very closely also with other outfits that have been created recently to look at the technological and the digital influence of our lives. So the board, to come back to your question, they're part of the advisory body. I mean, we really have to make sure that the path we take and the decision that we take are the right ones. And for that, we do need to have the kind of very high level and experienced advisory board, the management board of our initiative. But we have also brought in and invited a whole series of other people. So we have on the one side, as I mentioned before, 65 or more scientists of very high level. And on the other side, we have created what we call the Diplomacy Forum, which is made up of about 17 or 18 people now for the time being, and a mixture of heads of international agencies, of former politicians, the former prime ministers, of science advisors to governments, as I said, social scientists. These two groups are now sort of merging into a conversation that became very, very rich and is helping us to sort of see clearly the direction in which we have to go.
Sorry to ask you a mundane question like grubby money, Michael, but who pays? Setting up an organization such as this, especially in an expensive city like Geneva, is not cheap, and you know that better than most people. How do you measure the return on investment?
Well, first of all, who pays? The government of Switzerland, the federal government, and together with the government of Geneva and the city of Geneva, together gave us a seed money to start. And we have in the meantime gone out and multiplied that seed money through private donations. Mm. We decided early on that for the time being, at least, we are not going to take and accept money from governments other than the Swiss government as the founder.
Yeah.
Simply to give ourselves the space and the neutrality to move ahead and to establish it. But there is quite a lot of interested money in foundations and in private donations because everybody sees this as a very worthwhile and, to put it in more modern terms, a very cool initiative.
No, it sounds fascinating.
That is worth investing in. So how do we measure success? Well, the success will be measured at the end of the process when we have solutions and we see how they're applied on the field. But in the meantime, I think that the success is measured in the level of acceptability in society for our initiative. I think one measure of success will be next year when we have to go back to the parliament and provide them with information on how we have actually done with our startup phase, and they will then take a decision together with the government on whether we continue, in what form, whether we continue as a foundation or a different kind of organization, etc. But the fact is that, as far as I'm concerned, I'm fairly confident that we have achieved already so much in a very short period of time there's no doubt about the fact that this is something that everybody understands is a need that we need to elaborate and to strengthen.
Michael, you partly answered my last question, but let me put it to you anyway. If we were to have a similar conversation this time in 2022, it's not long, really, in a long-term project like the one you're engaged with, where would you expect to be, allowing for the fact that events are uncertain? We've certainly seen that with this pandemic, of which we're in the middle. And I know that you don't have the powers of a clairvoyant, but where would you expect to be this time next year?
Well, this time next year, we will already be well into the sort of operational phase of our move towards solutions, and we'll have something tangible to be able to prove. Sometime in the summer next year, we are going to have a summit in which we publicly will present the work of the foundation. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is that we will be very close to having the conversation with our founders on where we're going and where we are, how we are going to get there. I think there's one aspect we haven't talked about, because, and it's a kind of a parallel objective of JESDA. And let me just step back in a moment to remind ourselves that science, in many ways, is the community that, in the most extraordinary way, has been able to continue cooperating across geographical divides, across political divides, in ways that most other communities haven't been. And if there's one example of that, is the extraordinary speed with which we have arrived at vaccines for the pandemic we are in today. We have to draw on that and learn from that, and that is also part of what our ambition is. And to in putting together that group of people who have a very deep tradition of collaboration and working together with the diplomacy world and the world of the ecosystem in Geneva, which also is working in many ways in a collaborative way, we will hopefully beginning to see the outlines of a proof of concept of a new kind of multilateralism, a new kind of working together, a new way of working in a much more integrated, networked, collaborative, de-siloed manner that can be scaled up to other governance structures, hopefully, around the world. And if we can do that, and by also proving that we have been effective and impactful, and thereby acquired the trust, or reacquired the trust, if you want, and helped reacquire the trust in science amongst many of our communities across the world, we would have done two good deeds to humanity.
That sounds very worthwhile, Michael. We're out of time, but thank you so much for this fascinating tour through your new professional activity. On behalf of everyone listening, I wish you every success in this new decade ahead of us. My guest today has been Michael Müller, the Geneva Science and Diplomacy Anticipator Foundation, known in short as JESDA, where he is chairman of its diplomacy forum. Michael, thanks so much.
That was the McKay Interview with Michael McKay. And don't forget, you can hear that interview again on our website, worldradio.ch.